Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hey, welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I'm your host, Brittany, and I'm so excited that you're joining me today. I am joined by Dr. Rachel Edo Eckett. She is the author of the best-selling book, The Principal's Journey, Navigating the Path to School Leadership. She has served for 20 years in education as a highly regarded teacher and leader, and currently serves as the principal of a top-ranked school in Maryland. As the 2024 president-elect of the Maryland Association of Elementary School Principals, she advocates on behalf of students, staff, and families to improve educational outcomes for all stakeholders. Dr. Edo Eckett was such an amazing guest to have. I really loved her personal touch that she adds to her job as a principal and how she connects with all of the students and the staff within her school. It's also really inspiring to see someone with an early childhood background within educational school leadership and administration. We talked about the role of a principal within the school district. So this was a really great conversation, and I am so excited to share it with you. So let's jump into it. Hello, hello, and welcome to Conscious Pathways. Today I am joined by Dr. Rachel Edo Eckett. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Brittany. I'm really excited.
I am so excited to have you here. I've been really like watching your journey on, you know, social media and LinkedIn, and you're such an inspiration. So I'm really excited to just get your insights on here today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about how you became in education. Who or what inspired you to take this route?
Yes. So my entire family basically are educators. I'm a third generation educator. So my grandmother was a school librarian in the Baltimore public school system, Baltimore City, for most of her career. And then my aunt also has her degree in music education. And my mother has her degree in music education as well. So I grew up with a family of teachers, and I've always loved students and learning and just being in school. I always loved school. So I never left school, basically kindergarten all the way up through graduate school and beyond. I've been in school as a teacher for many years in early childhood and kindergarten, first and second grade, and then made the transition to school-based leadership as an assistant principal. And now my current role as a principal.
Wow. I love that, especially being that, you know, third generation teacher and just having a lineage of teachers behind you.
Yes.
Been
yes.
there, done that, know the system. That's got to be really inspiring and just incredible to see.
Yeah, I have great memories of going to my aunt's school, my grandmother's classrooms, and helping them set up as a child. And I would get their old plan books. And as a child, I would wow. play school and teacher. So I knew that I had always wanted to be a teacher. I did not know school leadership was in my future, but I did know I was going to be a good teacher. That was something that I was very passionate about doing.
Yes, absolutely. And you mostly taught like the younger kind of early childhood.
Yes, yes. That's my bread and butter. I love the younger students. I love all students, but mm-hmm. particularly the early childhood years are really important to me, teaching yes. children how to read and helping them, you know, make sense of the world and seeing the world through their eyes is something that's really important to me, and making sure that things are developmentally appropriate for children and that they have access to wonderful learning materials. So I'm very, very passionate about making sure that early childhood is the place where students really can thrive and get a good foundation for the rest of their educational careers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that you touched on making things developmentally appropriate. I come from an early childhood background as well. And that's just something that is so incredibly important. Like, yes, it's important that we're doing education. Let's do reading. Let's do literacy. Like, these are all really important aspects, but let's make sure we're doing it in a way that is developmentally appropriate for the students you have in front of you right now.
Yes, exactly. It makes a big difference.
It does. It does. It makes a huge difference. And, you know, I love seeing, you know, people within school leadership who have that background in early childhood, because again, it is so important, and knowing the developmental stages and knowing, you know, how we can do things in a developmental way is so incredibly important. So I love seeing us in leadership positions.
Yeah, like,
yes, we're out there advocating.
Yes, I think I agree. When I was first promoted to an assistant principal out of kindergarten, I received messages from people all over my district just saying that they were excited to have someone who has an early childhood eye in school-based administration. It's not as usual that you have someone with an early childhood and elementary background. However, it's very helpful, I think, to have that, because we do serve so many students of different ages. In my school, we have students who are age 3 all the way up to 12. So it's to my advantage to have that background and that foundation in early childhood, because I know the strategies, I know the best practices, and I can help support new teachers or teachers who are transitioning into that level that may not have that experience.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Having that background in early childhood, I feel like it's helped me in a lot of ways, even outside of education. So as a teacher, obviously it was helpful. But then when I went and did nonprofit management and worked with other companies, like just having that background and understanding in child development, I took that everywhere. And it was just so useful.
Yes.
For just dealing with people in general.
Yeah, I agree. I think we can scale up so many skills that we learned. Mm-hmm. I think of the book, Everything I Learned in Kindergarten. There are so many skills that I have as a principal that I developed as like a kindergarten teacher, being an ambassador for a school and meeting families where they are and helping to explain the process of schooling and helping to acclimate children. These are all things that I've done as a kindergarten teacher and all things that I currently do in my role as principal. So the roles are quite similar, and I would love to be part of a movement to have more early childhood teachers come into school-based administration, because I think we have a lot of great perspectives to offer.
Absolutely. I fully support that. I'm behind it.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's fun. You know, both roles are different, but they're fun roles. They're great things, and we're serving the community. And that's that's the best thing about the job.
Yes, absolutely. And so I know you mentioned you went from, you know, teaching into an assistant principal position. So what was that transition like, from being kind of mostly in the classroom to more leadership roles? How's that?
That was a huge transition. There were definitely several blind spots that I had coming out of the classroom and not understanding some of the global reach of a school. So thankfully, my principal that worked with me was very patient, and she allowed me to make mistakes and really kind of walk me through those. The staff that I have here, because I'm someone who was an assistant principal that was promoted to principal within the same school. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have those relationships and grow as a leader, as an assistant principal into the principalship. But I would say that I just had a lot of blind spots. There were certain things in the classroom, the way that the classroom system moves, you might talk to 2 staff members and make a decision and move forward. Well, when you're an administrator, you have to involve a lot of people in decision-making, because if you miss one link, then that can impact, you know, everyone else in a domino. So that was something that I had to learn. I had to learn who to bring to the table and include early and often in those process of decision-making, so that things work really collaboratively and well as a system. We have a very, very large school. We serve 960 students and 120 staff members and many more hundreds community members and parents. So when you're working in a system of this size, my school being that, it's very important to have, you know, regimented schedules and, you know, those processes and logistics so that you run the school very smoothly. And that's something that we're proud of that we've been able to do.
Wow, that is a lot of students.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I could definitely see that you would need to be very regimented and just doing a lot of things. So that's a lot of moving pieces all at once between the students and the parents and the community and the teachers and, you know, like just all the staff that just make the school community.
Yeah.
It's a lot of moving pieces. So that's incredible.
Yeah. And that's what was very different, I think, coming out of the classroom. When you are serving 22 students, you have your own way of doing things. But when you join a school as a leader, you have to learn the way that the school does things and then provide input and try to make improvements where you can. But that was a very big leap for anyone, I think, coming out of a classroom and into that first year as an administrator. Lots of learning, lots of great learning.
Yes. Yes, lots of learning, lots of growing.
Yes, lots of growing.
And I know in a lot of your content, you really emphasize this, you know, cultivating really meaningful and fostering relationships. So how do you cultivate those relationships, you know, with your students, with basically your whole, you know, school community, the students, the teachers, other staff members? What does that process generally look like for you?
So for me, one of the easiest ways that I build relationships with people is just by being a friendly and helpful presence. So if there's anyone that needs anything, I'm always someone who will step in and say, can I help you or what do you need? So that's a really simple way to start building relationships. I also learn people's names very quickly. When I first came out of the classroom that summer, I studied our yearbook and I learned all of the staff members' faces and names before they ever met me. Because in the summertime is just basically me and the principal. And so they had the staff have one name to learn. That was me. I had 120 to learn. So that's how I started. I started, you know, learning the yearbook. And when you know someone's name, that already gives you a level of familiarity. So that first day when everyone came back in August and I was calling people by their names, they were surprised. But I think that was a great start because, I didn't have to spend time learning that. I put in the work ahead of time. And same thing with students. With students, I learn their names. I learn how to pronounce them correctly. I'm someone with a name that is challenging for people when they first see it. It's not hard to say, but it looks intimidating. And so one of the examples I use is if you can say Michelangelo, then you can say Odoeket. If you can say Baryshnikov, you can say Odoeket. And it's the same with students. If I can say those names and I can learn any other name. So sometimes it'll take me a couple of corrections and the students will say, nope, try again. And I'll keep trying until I get their name pronounced correctly. But that's really important to building relationships is calling people by the names that they want to be called correctly. And then finally, I think just putting the time in to get to know people. So my staff knows, yes, I'm a principal, but I'm also a wife. I'm a mother. I have twins. There are many other things that I like to do outside of the school. And people are the same way. Everyone has a story. So it's important that we take time to get to know people and their stories outside of their jobs or just whatever position or role that they have. And I find that's a great way to build relationships with people that really last beyond the work that we're doing today.
Yes. I love that you mentioned finding their stories, right? And really connecting with that because yes, we're teachers and yes, we're passionate about what we do and all these really great things, but taking the time to really get to know someone and what attributes make them who they are.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about some of the best places that I've, you know, worked at, you know, the connections that I've made with my coworkers, the connections I've made with other people on staff, like those things, they stick with you. And, you know, they really can make it or break it when you're going somewhere, you're spending a lot of your time, your precious time, you know, in a place. And so knowing that people genuinely want to know about you, they want to know about what you like, who you are, right? Not in a too invasive way, but it's just to know that they are genuinely showing an interest in knowing what your story is like and what do you care about outside of the work that you do every day. And the profound impact that can have, even just a little simple, like, you know, 5 minutes, you know, conversation, just asking, you know, what they did this weekend or
exactly.
You know, asking about what books they're reading, like just those little things just show that you're interested in them as people.
And I think as a leader, it's hard because there's so many people. So I know I have blind spots too, in terms of like, I'll try to think, okay, who haven't I engaged with or who haven't I talked to in a while? I need to go and see them. So there are some people, like I just had a conversation yesterday with a staff member and I said, you know, I haven't talked to you in a while and I miss that time. I want to sit down and just chat with you. So we chatted for about 10 minutes and caught up and it was nice. We had a hug afterwards. I said, you know, I really appreciated the time. So it's also about the time that you invest in people. We're all busy. We know that. But sometimes that time can make all of the difference and people need that time. So That's an investment that is very important for leaders and to make.
Yes, absolutely. It's a big investment and it's a really important investment. And I think, you know, I've said this on the podcast many, many times before, but, you know, as leaders, when we're working with educators, we can't really expect educators to go out and do world-class, you know, teaching if we're not giving them that experience as leaders, right? If I'm not showing you what restorative practices look like, I can't really expect you to go do it because you haven't felt it. You haven't seen it. You haven't seen me practice that with you. Therefore, you know, how can I expect that you're going out there and being able to practice it if you haven't experienced it, right?
Right.
And so we know how important it is in the classroom to, you know, do our best to make genuine, meaningful connections with our students. And we know the long-term impact that that has on students when we do that. And so by practicing that with our teachers, giving them those moments, like you just said, like just moments, one-on-one moments, and just connecting with people. And it doesn't have to take, you know, you don't have to connect with every single person for like 30, 40, 100, you know, like a whole hour. You know, we don't have time for all of that. But like even just those couple of like, you know, 10, 15 minutes of just connecting with someone, I haven't seen you in a while, like what's going on?
Yeah.
That makes a world of difference, you know, in all of our lives.
Yeah, it does. And I think you mentioned also the importance of, you know, teachers are very busy and many are feeling very overwhelmed. And that could be the difference for a teacher, whether or not, you know, we're able to retain them. So that's also a big part of our job as leaders is how can we make the environment such for our teachers that our teachers are feeling successful, because there are a lot of demands that are coming outside of the school that are into the schoolhouse. And so if we're going to be able to retain the people that we hire that are great people, then we have to do our best to ensure that they're feeling supported, that they're feeling comfortable, that we have a good relationship with people, that they can come to us if they have a concern, and we will try our best to mitigate those. So that's all a part of our responsibility. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you just kind of touched on, you know, some of the challenges that teachers are facing. You know, there's a lot of demands coming, you know, from all kinds of directions, right? From, you know, parents, from the school districts, from, you know, leadership and all these things. There's a lot of things that are kind of pulling teachers in multiple different directions. So, you know, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that teachers are facing today? And, you know, how can we as leadership kind of help to mitigate and to navigate some of these challenges?
Yeah, I think time management is probably one of the biggest challenges. There is a lot of the curriculum, and there have been some changes, and there will continue to be curriculum changes that teachers are going to be implementing. There's also attendance issues sometimes that students are having, and that impacts their performance and also the supports that teachers can offer. So that's another challenge. And definitely, I think people have their own challenges outside of the school. And that's always been the case, right? Mm-hmm. Teachers are really good at putting on a face for school and being professionals, no matter what is happening in their personal lives. But, you know, that is always going to be a challenge and a part of the job. So I think some of the ways that we can support teachers, one of the things that I've always done and that I've done myself is I've taken advantage of the employee resources. Sometimes many districts have sometimes free resources for teachers to use, like financial planning or therapy. Those are all things that I have accessed in the past when I was feeling down and really challenged, particularly during COVID. I was a new principal during COVID-19. And that was a very hard time for everyone, family, students, staff alike. And I knew my attitudes and my feelings were not as they normally were. So I knew that I needed some more support. So I always encourage my staff to take advantage of the free resources that we have available to us. We're very blessed in our district to have access to those. But I think also, even before you get to that point, as a school leader, I try to think about what are some things that I can take off of the teacher's plates so that they have time to do more of the work that they need to be focused on. So one of those is meetings. We really try to consolidate meetings. We really try to make sure that whatever professional learning that we're offering is relevant, is timely for the teacher, something that they can take back with them right away. That's really important because time, right? We all are struggling for time and we want to maximize that. So if there's a choice for me between, you know, a meeting that could be an email, a meeting that I could send a video out instead of actually gathering people. And, mm-hmm. and then I would do that. And I think that's good to show respect to people's time, because that gives them more time that they need to devote to their students.
Mm. Yes, yes, yes. And I love so much of what you just said, but really harnessing in on those resources. Like sometimes we just don't know that there's resources available to us. Yeah. And so we're just kind of in, you know, in the thick of it, just struggling.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you have free resources. You have things that you can do. You have things that you can advocate for as well. So if, you know, whether that's therapy resources, whether that's, like you said, financial planning, mm-hmm. There's oftentimes a lot of resources that we just don't know about. And being able to access them is so incredibly important, and especially just, you know, as we know, teaching is hard, education is hard, and it takes a toll. And so it's really important that as educators and as leadership that we are taking care of each other and we're taking care of ourselves. And we're kind of knowing, you know, where our limits are, we're knowing where our boundaries are, and just doing our best to, you know, provide that world-class education that we can, but also at the same time, making sure that our needs are cared for and that we have what we need to also be successful and to thrive. Because again, we can't pour from an empty cup. And, you know, the students, they can see it. They can tell, you know, when you're not bringing your full and whole self into, you know, the classroom, and they can tell. So that's so important. So
that's why I also try to focus on the joyful moments. So there are so many wonderful things that happen during the school day. I love being a principal. I love being able to walk around this classroom and schools and seeing what the students are learning. I like to ask them what they're doing and interact and play and get outside at recess and have lunch with students. That's really important to me because that's what I value in terms of my relationships with kids. I've always missed that piece, being away from the classroom. And so the way that I've learned to function in my role as principal is just to be out in the building as much as possible, to be out with staff, be out with the students and families during the school day, after the school day. All those things are really important to me. And so taking advantage and creating those positive, joyful moments is something that I would recommend for everyone to do. Do it every single day. Find some point during the day to do something with a child or, you know, with your colleague that you love and enjoy, because that's a way that we can help sustain ourselves during the most challenging times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, that's one thing I've always really enjoyed about, you know, your content and the things you speak about is that I do see you, you know, you're out on the playground with, you know, the students and the kids, and you're just kind of out and about all the time. And it makes me reflect, like, I don't think I remember really ever seeing my principal in elementary school or really middle school and high school all that much, except for like kind of rallies every now and then. And so it kind of made it like this daunting figure. Like if you saw the principal, it's like, oh no,
what's going on? You know?
So if you could walk us through kind of the day in the life of a principal, what is the responsibilities? Yeah. What are you generally doing?
Okay, so the first thing that I do usually when I come into school is I have some sort of meeting. That's just a part of, you know, getting ready for the day. I look at my schedule. I'll see what's planned for the day. I usually am meeting with my leadership team or perhaps some of the team leaders. And we might say, you know, these events are coming up. Let's do some planning for that. And then when the school day actually begins, that's when the fun really starts. So I always am outside greeting families in the car line. For instance, yesterday it was pouring, raining on the East Coast where I am. And so I had my umbrella out, I had my rain boots and, you know, walking children in and greeting them and by their name, saying hello to their parents. That's a part of my daily routine. And then when the school day begins, so this week we just came back from spring break. So what I like to do is spend like the first hour of the day visiting students in class. So when we come off of break, I actually will take 2 hours to block off on my calendar and I will walk and see every classroom, because I want to welcome the students back from a break. So this is every break. I do this after Thanksgiving. I do this after winter break. I do this after spring break, because it's really important to me that I see the students and the students see me. I ask them, what did you do? Did you have fun? Some students stayed home. Some students travel. All those things is connecting back with kids. So usually in the mornings, I walk through classrooms. I'll ask students what they're learning. I'll talk with the teachers informally. And then more meetings usually. And then if there is time, I will go outside for recess. I really enjoy seeing, even if it's for 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, even if it's 5 minutes, I will try to go outside and see the students. I'll walk through the cafeteria because that's another way that I can see a large group of students all at the same time. And it's also helpful for me to be there because students just have better behavior when the principal's there. So it's like two win-win. And so I usually will walk around, ask the students what they're eating, you know, how's the day going, that sort of thing. And then sometimes I meet with parents throughout the day. There might be a concern that a parent has. I want to sit down, hear from the parent, and then I will follow up with the teachers, ask them questions, and come back with a resolution and, you know, plan to follow up with families. That happens usually as a part of my day. I also will spend time in classrooms observing teachers. So I might, we will already have planned a pre-conference, and then I will go in and do the formal observation. And then sometimes I have meetings afterwards to follow up and share information, what I learned and questions mm-hmm. that I had, and, you know, all the wonderful things that they're doing. And then at the end of the day, same thing. I'm still walking through classrooms, you know, connecting with kids. If there's any questions, I help answer them. And then back outside, car duty again, bus loop, saying goodbye to kids. So that is usually what a day in the life is like mm-hmm. for me. It is busy, but it's a great busy. It's a busy, every day is new. So that's what's fun about being a school-based leader. And a teacher is the same, right? There's no 2 days that are going to be identical. There are days when I'm like, okay, I have nothing on the calendar. It's going to be awesome. And then something spontaneous happens and that takes up the whole day. Other times I have lots of meetings planned and some meetings get canceled. And I'm like, oh, this is great. I have time now to go out and see more kids. So really it's a priority for me to have face time with my students and my staff. That is what I prefer to do.
Yes, I love that. And I think that really goes into, you know, your leadership style and how you approach leadership. And, you know, when you make those really meaningful connections with your staff and your school community, and then you're also making meaningful connections with those students and they're seeing your face every day. So you're not this kind of like apparition that appears sometimes when things are going south, you know, like,
no, and that's what I don't want. That's what I don't want. I know all the principals, like you've mentioned, your principals were different. So for me in elementary school, I did see my principal all the time. Mr. Slacom was one of my favorite principals I've ever had. And he used to have pizza parties when, you know, for great behavior. So that was something different. Typically, when you think of the principal's office, you think of, you know, you're in trouble or something punitive. Whereas when I was a child, it wasn't that way. I loved my principal and we had great memories in the office. So that's what I'm doing now with my students. Typically, if you're in my office, you're in there for lunch and we're having a great time. We're taking pictures and we're having fun. And the students get a copy of the picture and I get a copy of the picture. So I've had, I have a decade worth of pictures from my school. These are students who, when I was a new assistant principal, have now since graduated high school and are in college. I still have their pictures from when they were in first grade, right? And then there's other times, yes, you have to come in and you might have made a mistake and we talk that through, but that's not going to be the first time that you see me. I know that. It's important for me that when you see me, the first touch we have is a positive touch. That way, if there is a mistake, then I can say, hey, remember we had lunch yesterday? What happened today? Right? So that helps a lot. And that helps with parents too, because they know that when I'm calling them, they're trusting me that I know their child. And if their child makes a mistake, then I say, you know, this is elementary school. This is the time for mistakes. These are teachable moments. And, you know, we'll figure it out. So that's the approach that I take when working with families too.
Yes. I love the phrasing of it. It's a teachable moment. They're making mistakes because they are. They're
young.
They're young.
They're not adults. Like, come on.
Exactly. They're young. And that's, you know, exactly what you said. That's what this time is for. Their brains are developing. They're learning a lot about how to be people. You know, how to be a responsible human, how to be a good person. Like, they're learning all of these different qualities. You know, that part of their brain that you know, is impulse control, it's still developing. So they're just being impulsive.
And it's going to be developing for a while. Well past elementary school, right? The still 25 in some cases. So I think that
growing.
The students need grace and teachers and families need grace too. So that's one thing I think that came out of the pandemic for me was just learning more about different needs that I wasn't aware of before the pandemic and understanding the pandemic. you know, has passed in terms of officially the pandemic has ended, but the needs are still there. Yes. That hasn't changed. So we still have to adjust and accommodate and do what makes sense for families.
Yes, absolutely. And you're so right. The needs have shifted and changed, you know, in our quote unquote post-COVID life. It's still out there doing COVID things, but, you know, officially. And so, but that doesn't mean that the impact of, you know, these last couple of years just kind of goes away and stops, you know? So we're still dealing with the impact of that. We're still dealing with, you know, what we've learned from that. And I don't think we learned a lot, especially in education around COVID, especially when we went, you know, virtual schooling and really learning about, okay, so how is our system set up to support students? How is it set up to support parents? How is it set up to support, you know, teachers when things drastically shift kind of overnight, essentially? So I think there's a lot of learning that we did and a lot of things that were highlighted that, you know, we still are looking for solutions to.
And it's complex. Like, there's not easy answers, but I think we did learn some good information. Like, there are some things that we did carry over from that time. For instance, I do a lot more communication via text and via computers and videos. And that was not something that we always did before, but we found that families were very responsive to that. They liked that. We did some surveys and asked about, would you prefer, you know, an email or a text? And many families said a text is great. If you can just shorten the message and just send it to me right before something is due, or, hey, science fair boards are due for the book fair, bring them in today. That helps families. So we have learned to adjust in that way. Even our back to school night looks different. We used to all gather together in the cafeteria and do this very long presentation for 25 minutes and then send them back. Now I pre-record everything over the summer. I send it out. I say, watch this at your earliest convenience before you come. Just make sure you have viewed it one time on YouTube, and that's it. So that helps for families who are busy, who need to access the information on their own time.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. And I think that goes into being just very responsive to what, you know, the families are needing. Like you said, families are busy. There's a lot going on. And so any ways that we can help and support them, right? I think in traditional, you know, ways of communication and traditional models of education, it's, you know, like you said, we send out this big massive email and, you know, there's all these different resources, all these different things that we're sending, like just via email. And so for some people, that's a very effective way. Like, I love a good email. For me, email me, I will read it, it'll be great. But I know, you know, as I've been working in nonprofits and working with just different populations, and communication styles have changed, you know, from generation to generation. And so I know I've had to get used to, like, just texting people more. I'm not a big texter in general. So. That's not my preferred method, but I do know that that's how other people just want to get quick snippets of information.
Just quick.
And it's just like, okay, I'm getting used to that. Let's do this.
We have to adjust, right?
Yes, we have to adjust.
As we are serving different people, you mentioned generations. That's true. I mean, in our schoolhouse, we have teachers who are Gen Z, that we have teachers all the way up, right? So, and I'm in the middle. I used to be the youngest on staff. That's not the case anymore. So things change. And we have to continue to be flexible with that change. I think the more flexibility that we have, and, you know, the less resistant we are to change, then that will help with our stress levels, right? If we have an understanding that things are going to continue to shift and change, then we'll be okay. If we're resistant to some of the shifting and changing, I think that makes it a little bit more challenging.
It does. It does. Yeah. And a change is hard. Like, I understand, I get it, you know, doing lots of shifts and changes is difficult. But I think, as you said, we see that the stress is less when we just try it out. Just try out the change.
One of my favorite mentors has been a principal now for 45 years. He actually hired me to open his school when I was in my third year of teaching. And now we are principal colleagues. That's how long he's been in the game. And when I watch him, I just see just a different affect. He has seen just about it all. And the way that he leads is, he's going to gather all the information. He's going to remain calm. He's going to talk about it and make decisions. So he doesn't get super excitable. He doesn't get super upset about things. He doesn't get overly excited. He just, you know, has a very level demeanor, and that, you know, he's going to work to figure it out. And I like that about him. That's a good model for me, because I tend to, okay, what's going on? But it's helping me to understand if I'm going to preserve myself as a leader, and if I'm going to be able to continue to pour into people, I have to take care of myself. And part of taking care of myself for me is understanding that I have to be more flexible, that I have to roll with some of the punches and some of the changes and just keep moving forward that way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, sign of really exceptional leadership is when you are able to adapt and change and see what needs to happen and, you know, move along like that. It's, you know, when we get too stagnant and we just get too like comfortable in where we are, you know, we're not really growing at that point, and we're not really seeing what the needs are in our community when we're, you know, just stagnating. And again, change is hard and shifting is hard, but it's amazing to see what happens when we just try.
Something new, right? And I always say to my staff, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. We always have an out. We know what we can go back to because we have a very rich history and legacy in our school. But if something does work and we try it, then we have something new in our toolbox to add.
So thinking about the future of education, how do you reimagine education?
Yeah, this is tough because it's hard to think ahead. There's been so many changes, I think, already. I definitely think things are going to continue to shift in terms of curriculum. And also, I can imagine that there'll be shifts even in the hiring. And the reason I'm saying that is because of the teacher shortage right now, that there's a big shortage of teachers and administrators. And so I think we are going to have to reimagine how we are leading and how we're teaching if we're going to be able to retain people. So that's where I think the shift is going to be coming from. I think it's going to be coming more top down. So I could see universities offering incentives. We really need more people into the field of education to be trained as teachers. So I could see that being a shift in the future. I could see a shift for school-based leaders in the future because our job is so challenging. How can we recruit people to do this job? I think students are going to be students. Students are here. Students are lovely. Parents are sending their best children. So that's not going to change. But I do think we're going to have to think about how we can better support teachers and educators in general and leaders to do the good work. So I think that's where we're going to have to really look at shifts.
Yes. And really thinking about, you know, our teacher preparation program. So how are we preparing our future teachers and future educators? You know, how are we, you know, we just talked about making those shifts and changes and accommodating and adapting for, you know, the world we have right now. And so how are we, it's hard to prepare future teachers for what, you know, the world of education is going to look like, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now. It's hard to imagine that, and it's hard to teach to that. But how are we having our teacher preparation programs shift and change to be accommodating to future educators? And that's just a really important thing that we just need to consistently look at and just be cognizant of. Because I know there are some practices in terms of, you know, either paraprofessionals, or there's practices of, you know, doing your kind of like your clinical hours where you're, you know, observing in classrooms and stuff like that. But then teachers aren't really getting paid. So it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. So our district actually has a teacher program, which is amazing. When they do it through Bowie State University, and they're looking for some more partnerships. So that's been amazing. And what's great about that is, even though it's not a paid internship, because most educators don't have a paid internship, but the staff does not have to take off work to do it. So they are doing two things at once. They're serving in their position as pairs, but they're also training, getting their student teaching experience. So they don't have to take a sabbatical, which is huge. That's what used to have to happen. Yes. Yeah.
And those are the shifts that we're talking about.
Yes.
Making those shifts so that it is not necessarily easier, but that it is more accessible to get into Absolutely. The teaching field and profession, right? Like, we don't want to put up more barriers to get into teaching. Right. We want more teachers. You know, we are going through a teacher shortage. We are seeing just a lot of teachers leaving the field. And so, yeah. as you said, how can we shift our practices to ensure that we are making space for educators in the field now, that we are retaining the educators that we have in our care right now? And then looking at, of course, how are we preparing our future educators, you know, so that they do feel prepared? Because sometimes I know when I first, you know, went into teaching and my first day, I was like, I do not know what I'm doing.
But you learned, right? You learned.
You learn and you do things and, you know, you have, you know, I eventually had some good, you know, teachers that I was kind of learning from in the, field. I had some really good mentors eventually.
Excellent.
But yeah, those first, that first year, I was like, I don't know what I'm just here.
Well, we're glad that you stayed and stayed the course and had great mentorship to help you, because that does make a big difference.
It makes a big difference. Yeah. It's huge. Thank you so much for really joining me and sharing all this beautiful knowledge. Where can my audience find you and connect with you?
Yeah, so thank you again for having me. This was a great conversation. I am on Twitter at Rachel Edelweckett. I also have a YouTube page at Rachel Edelweckett, and my LinkedIn is Dr. Edelweckett, and I have Instagram, which I'm most active on, and that's at The Principal's Journey. I didn't mention much about that, but I have a book out called The Principal's Journey, Navigating the Path to School Leadership, and it's for teacher leaders or assistant principals or district leaders who want to transition into school-based leadership. So I give a step-by-step guide on how to find a mentor, challenges and rewards of the role, how to have hard conversations, setting a vision, you know, having a good work-life balance, all the things that you would need to be successful.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Edelweckett, for joining me. And I'll link all of those things in our show notes. So if you're curious to connect, if you want to check out that book, it'll be linked down below for you to give that a check out.
Thank you.
Again, thank you so much for joining me. This conversation was so wonderful, and I'm just so happy that we got to connect.
Yes, thank you again. This was great. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. And also don't forget to leave a rating or review. It really helps to grow the podcast and find more listeners just like you. If you're curious about more ways to support Conscious Pathways, you can check us out on Instagram at conscious.pathways, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. It's just Brittany Carey on LinkedIn. I'm also starting up a Patreon, so if you're looking for ways to financially support the podcast, you can join our Patreon. There's some benefits of joining the Patreon. You'll have access to my newsletter that I'll be launching, and you'll also have the ability to ask questions that I can answer here on the podcast or ask an expert. So there's other benefits of joining, and you could check out the Patreon in our show notes below so you can kind of see what the perks of that are. Or if you just want to send a one-time donation, I do have a coffee link available below as well. And until next time, don't forget to navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness, and I'll see you there for more transformative conversations in education. Bye!